All right, I believe we are live on Facebook with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. This is the Ask the Mayor show that we do once a month in Bloomington. We're in Terre Haute and Columbus and in Brown County with Nashville too, once a week, every month. And again, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for having us with, for you being with us today. I appreciate it.
Great to see you, Joe. Welcome back. Nice to be together again.
You know, hard to believe, third week of August, and I think we can just start with what's on the minds of people. Fall semester at IU within a week. Is there any immediate data or news on this IU move-in that's been happening the past couple weeks? I think we know everybody has to be tested, but we're also reading reports from other schools, Notre Dame, North Carolina, that the COVID outbreaks are happening. What's happening right now in Bloomington?
Well, you're right, Joe. There's a lot of change going on in Bloomington right now. Of course, MCCSC, our local public school corporation, has begun classes in the last few days, though those are being done remotely. IU students are moving in on campus and off campus. It's the time for U-Hauls and parents coming into town and 30,000 plus students. So there's a lot of testing, but also a lot of anxiety, hoping that this will work. All right. Our numbers in Monroe County continue to be quite good in terms of positivity rates. That is, how many people who get tested show a positive result, and that's very low. It's around 3%, which is excellent, much lower than the state or the country. But as you indicate, there are certainly stories all around the country where the virus can just explode again. And We're watching for parties and big gatherings where they shouldn't be happening, and the police departments, both IU and city, are working together. I spoke this morning to a group of 100 freshmen and just reminded them, you know, what you do is going to matter. How you behave as students with masks and distancing is going to make the difference on whether or not the school can keep operating this way.
So IU will also have a dashboard with COVID data from the tests that are coming back, and will that be updated weekly? And that will count for Monroe County totals, so there could see a spike coming up here soon.
We're going to see, as IU is releasing those tests now to the state health department, we're going to see a big number of new tests and probably some new infections. IU has indicated that they're going to release publicly, as you indicated, weekly, the results of their tests. They're doing thousands of tests a day, I think, as students are coming back. That will be really important to monitor. We're doing, at the city of Bloomington Utilities is doing wastewater testing to a few places around town to look if we can see virus blooms that are happening. So the more we can test and find where there are problems, the better chance we have of containing those infections, that's going to be the key. Monroe County has been stricter than the state. It's hard to know cause and effect, but we have a lower rate than the state. We have a mask order in place earlier. We had restrictions on bars and restaurants tighter, and we're in a decent shape right now. It's just a question of, can we maintain it? It's a 50-50 proposition, frankly, from my perspective.
Are there calls coming in? Are you seeing these parties happening, and are they being enforced?
There are calls. There's a county hotline that people are welcome to call, or people can call 911 or my office to report things they see, go online. I know the police departments of Indiana University and Bloomington Police have kind of divided up the coverage of the city to respond to inappropriate gatherings, and we are doing that right now. IU has pledged to use the university enforcement, if you will, the student discipline that they can show and give to help protect against that. And look, it's going to depend on behaviors and wearing masks, not doing stupid things and silly things, and gathering in large numbers of people inside without masks and distancing, and that's going to determine how we go.
So I see if you look at the COVID, the state COVID in Monroe County, you know, cases are going down. It's not like May and June, but also there's been news reports about people are not taking as many tests either. Some reports about being discouraged by the long wait times. I know the Bloomington Center was closed for a while because of heat problems, although now they have a portable air conditioner. So that must be frustrating that you want all these tests, but people are not getting tested. They're getting frustrated.
Well, we're 6 months after almost the real pandemic hit, and we still don't have a good national testing scheme. We don't have statewide testing. We don't have anything like the testing we should have. We're fortunate in Bloomington that we have Indiana University that has just taken it upon themselves to do many, many, many more tests than otherwise would be happening. They're testing all the on-campus students before they go to their dorms. They're testing all the off-campus students before classes open next week. Those tests aren't perfect, but if you do have a regime of testing your community regularly, periodically, you can find problems. Now, you know, these aren't cures, but that is really important. Now, I'll note, we have seen in hospitalizations, hospitalizations don't really depend upon testing, because if you're sick, you're sick. You go to the hospital, you're going to the hospital. And we have seen a rise again. We had a big bump in the spring. It went down in the summer. It's come up again, not as high as in the spring. It's kind of steady and flattened a little bit, which is good. We need to make sure that trailing indicator, because that usually happens a week or two after infections grow, that we don't see a rise in that as well. But so far, look, the indicators are decent. It's just we know we've got some dynamic factors that are threatening.
You mentioned the COVID wastewater study. My colleague, Brock Turner, did a story on that in Carmel, Indiana. Uh-huh. And we can probably link to that story he did. He went there and talked to the people in charge and showed how that was being done. Can you maybe describe a little bit about, first of all, how that's process is coming to Bloomington, but then how that actually works?
Well, Carmel was earlier on this, and we over the last few months, probably 3 months ago or so, started to look at this, and the utilities looked at it. I talked with them about it, and we were thinking about, is this something we could do? The state has stepped up to help finance it. And what you basically do is, you know, our bodies, if we have bodies that are infected with the virus, we eliminate it in our waste. And in the waste stream, you can test for how much of the virus is detectable in the waste stream. So actually, for the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've been testing at the wastewater plants. So that's at the end of the pipe, all the collected waste from Bloomington in two different waste plants. We've got weekly tests, and those are getting tested now to give us the benchmark numbers, and we'll keep testing those weekly. It's a multi-$1,000 machine that has to draw these samples. You have to freeze them. You have to analyze them in a lab to look for the virus. The new thing we're doing this week is we're putting in about three or four locations, some grab sample machines that we can target toward areas of interest. And for example, if we have an area of town, the sewers all come out of a high student population area, you know, 10 square blocks, let's say. We can put a machine to test 3 times a week and say, what is the virus load overall on average from these 10 blocks? And it's experimental, but what it does is every 2 or 3 days you get a number. And if you see a significant move in that number up or down, it gives you some indication that the virus is growing or shrinking in that area of a few thousand people, let's say. You could do it at a high school. You could do it at a particular location on campus. So CBU is going to be doing that over the next few weeks, and we'll share what data we can. We're using Carmel's experience. There's a lab in Notre Dame that's been helpful, and we're using a private lab to do the test.
And is there a special funding for this that the city has to do this?
Actually, the state is helping us fund. The utility bought a couple of these machines on their own. They're $4,000 or something, but the state is helping finance. It's not incredibly expensive in the big scheme of things. And if it can give us some useful data that can help us target problem areas, it's definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get into, of course, we're in the budget talks now this week. But something that you've been talking about since even January 1st was a three-phase initiative, and now it's kind of changed, because right now you could see even around you right now on your screen, you have Recover Forward Bloomington that you've been really promoting as an initiative to fund a variety of programs for now to climb out of this pandemic hole. Is this kind of the same initiative that you proposed back during your State of the City address?
Well, nothing's really the same as it was in January or February, given what COVID has done and the economic collapse. Recover Forward, which I've used to talk about a package of things, is really meant to, from the City of Bloomington perspective, to try to articulate our role. Governments are really important, local government, state government, federal government, to help communities and cultures and our society respond to challenges. We have four really big challenges right in front of us. One is the health pandemic. Two is the economic collapse that accompanied the pandemic. Three is the racial injustice, which has become very active, and millions of people marching and people trying to say, look, we need to make progress on this. And fourth is climate change, which lurks in the background and stands challenging all of us. So Recover Forward is trying to think about, as a community, as we claw our way out of the economic recession, as we recover from the pandemic, how do we move in the right direction? How do we recover forward into a community that has more economic justice, more racial justice, and more climate justice, so that we can be the kind of community we want to be? It's not about, let's go back to what we were in 2019 and figure out how to get back there. It's like, how do we move forward on these other issues? And as you mentioned, it's kind of a multi-phase approach. The City Council approved phase one last week, which is some basically emergency recovery money, $2 million for this year. The budget in 2021 proposes some other kinds of investments to do the same. And then phase three is looking at, do we need more revenue to keep this progress going?
That first chunk, it's close to $2.2 million. I was looking over all the different things, programs that it funds. The largest chunk, or one of the biggest chunks, $650,000, goes to sidewalks, path enhancements, transit improvements, I think transit stops. Some may say, why are we spending $650,000 for sidewalks during a pandemic?
Yeah, so we really try to think about, how do you help the economy recover, which means jobs and spending in some ways, right? If we have projects that we can do, how do we get those going quickly so more people can get back to work, and also that we're creating the infrastructure that we want? The bus system had previously identified a whole bunch of bus stops that had accessibility issues. For some people, that's really, really important, getting to and from work or healthcare or schools or other things. So doing a quick hits on bus stop improvements for $250,000, one, it creates jobs because we're going to be hiring people to do that work. And two, it creates an infrastructure that will help our community climb out of this this hit. Another, we are way behind in terms of physical infrastructure and sidewalks, and more people are walking and using sidewalks, and we want to be sure that we're doing all we can to improve them. Now, admittedly, this is also, what can we do in the 4 months remaining in 2020 to help the economy? And these are some quick projects that we can push money out the door that need to be done, and if we do them quickly, they'll help create jobs locally as well.
But to take that maybe a little further, shouldn't the city be spending maybe that money on, you know, those who are facing evictions, or maybe food banks, utility shutoffs, business grants?
Well, we're doing a lot of that. The Recover Forward has a whole array of approaches, which do include housing support. They do include support for social safety net and food providers and others like that, housing support. We've been doing millions of dollars of support for local businesses, and we want to continue doing that. So Recover Forward is actually a big range of projects and approaches. Evictions is incredibly important. Now, I also think one of the things we want to do is each government entity kind of do what they can do best. And the county has already stepped forward with eviction support, which I support and applaud. They've put $100,000 into the township trustees to help push that out. They have more that they can do if that's appropriate and needed. State government's doing eviction support, federal government's doing eviction support. So we tried to really identify where some places where our $2 million, which is, look, it's not a lot of money in the big scheme of things, but where can we make the most impact in the short run?
Right. And from what I understand, there's about $18 million in reserves. I think you want to use, was it about $8 million?
Yes. So the overall Recover Forward really has two big pieces. We've been talking about the investments that will help the community climb out of this hole and move in the right direction. And another half of it is really just focused on making sure we don't have to do layoffs, making sure we can continue the basic services because our revenues are down some. We want to make sure we as a government are continuing to employ our people to pick up the trash, to patrol our streets, to respond to fires, to clean up the parks, to all those things that we need to do, pick up, you know, animal welfare, all those activities. Half of the money is going to make sure we can keep doing that in the face of some declining revenues.
I also have to ask about the point. It's a 0.25% local income tax increase in 2021. You mentioned this to fund these projects then for the next decade or so. So during an economic recession, pandemic, you know, how many cities are wanting to increase taxes? Is that kind of going the other direction?
Well, it's I would put it this way. Anytime you raise taxes, it's not usually popular. People sign and say, yeah, let's do that. I think the choice, whether to increase revenue, always should be based on what do we need it for? What is the revenue going to do for us? If we have it, what does our community look like? If we don't have it, what does our community look like? And we'll be talking about that in the weeks and months ahead as we move forward. It's kind of one step at a time. We have the 2020 investments beginning. The 2021 budget is being reviewed this week. And then after that, I think it'll be time to look at revenue. I did, when I first proposed this in January, I proposed a 0.5% because I felt that was needed and appropriate to take the steps the city needs to create economic opportunity, to protect racial justice, to do our part on climate justice, improve our public transit system and our infrastructure and all that. We've cut it in half in light of some of the economic pressures. I do think it's interesting for people to know as well that the County of Monroe, and these are countywide taxes, has the lowest tax rate of all the counties next to us. Of the seven counties in our region, Monroe County, which pretty clearly is the most progressive and liberal county of all those counties, has the lowest income tax rate. That means other counties have raised their taxes to do things that they think are important, and we have stayed low. I know nobody's in favor of taxes for taxes' sake, but it is instructive. Even if we raised our tax this much, we probably will still be the lowest, because Owen County is looking at raising their tax right now too for another purpose. So either way, we're a very low tax jurisdiction, and I think it's going to be a community conversation about, is it worth doing now or not?
You know, with budget sessions this week, I know you've talked about social justice initiatives, and there's a consulting group on assessing public safety. Mm-hmm. Are they out of Bloomington?
No, that's a consulting group we hired, I think, about 3 years ago. We did a big nationwide request for qualifications and identified a group. I believe they're out of Ohio. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly. They're not Bloomington, I know. And we've used them over the last 3 years to help us do kind of a third party outsider, their national expert, look at how Bloomington city government is organized and how to improve it. We've used it in a number of ways to improve our departments, reorganize, restructure, align them differently. We're proposing a new engineering department this year because of that. We're proposing an assembly of the parking services because of that. And they did also, starting last year, review public safety and made some recommendations about the public safety divisions too.
How much has local organizations going? I'm kind of trying to steer more toward the social justice initiative part of this. How much have local organizations, you know, Black Lives Matter, like that, have been part of to able to be a consultant to the city in these types of initiatives?
Well, we have, I'll give you another example where Black Lives Matter has been very involved and continues to be as a group, which was the farmers market. Last summer, of course, we had a lot of issues that the community cared a lot about in connection with the farmers market. We brought in a group out of Ohio State, which was again, a national expertise. This one didn't cost us a dime. Brought them in to help look at how does a community deal with racial issues like were happening in the farmers market. And this group led a process with some local involvement as well, intensively involving Black Lives Matter and many, many voices to talk about what should we do with the farmers market. And it's actually that process which is leading to a big step, I think, in the next weeks or months to create a community-wide task force that will dig into racial structural racism and racial issues. This is not going to be a city-led group, but it's a city-supported group, community-led, that will say, what do we want to talk about with public education, with public safety, with criminal justice, with healthcare, with housing, with jobs? How does structural racism affect us now? And that will be a very inclusive process with groups like Black Lives Matter or NAACP or campus groups and others that will be very involved in helping us look at that as a community.
I know we're getting short on time. We have four questions I want to get to from people who have emailed in. Anything new on your plan to bring citywide broadband to Bloomington?
Boy, hasn't it been clear how important broadband capacity is over the last 5 or 6 months? We are continuing to explore. We were not able, and I think the national election in 2016 did not help us in moving toward a citywide infrastructure. We're continuing to explore that even now. But what we did do when we couldn't get a full citywide build done, we continue to ask our providers, AT&T and Comcast and Smithville, to improve services. But we did do a digital survey, particularly a digital equity survey in the spring. It was actually before COVID hit. We didn't know it was coming. And that digital survey was just released a week or two ago. Showed us things like 1 out of 8 low-income households reports zero connection to the internet, never. 50% of senior and low-income households report, I don't have the skills I need to be comfortable and effective in engaging in digital commerce or digital activities. We had households report homework problems. So this is helping us identify where there are some challenges with broadband access. And we've actually created in Recover Forward a small grant program to try to help with partners in the community, Boys and Girls Club, Area 10 on Aging, others like that, to do how can we chip away at these digital equity issues. So we're working on it, but it's still a big problem.
Sure. Lee wants to know about the rules about masks on the Beeline Trail.
Well, Beeline Trail is really treated like any park or any sidewalk. Individuals under the state now, and of course we had that local order earlier, are required to wear a mask generally, unless you're at home with your household, or you're outdoors and not within 6 feet of people, there are other special circumstances that can be relevant. But generally, you are to have a mask if you're in any public place indoors, or if you're going to be closer than 6 feet to people. So question on the Beeline is generally, if you're going to stay 6 feet apart from people other than your own household members, you're okay not with a mask. But if you may be pausing and getting a cup of coffee or stopping and chatting with people, you really should have a mask. So I would recommend, and I try always to carry a mask, even if you're outdoors exercising or walking.
And Georgianne wants to know if police officers are required to wear masks.
Generally, yes, police officers are required to wear masks, just like all of our city employees. There are some differences for public safety employees like firefighters and police officers in how they engage with the public in certain circumstances where it's deemed not appropriate to wear a mask. Police officers are often entering a situation where it's really important that they be identifiable and identified quickly. But generally, yes. Now, our police officers do single car patrols. So when they're alone in their car, They need not wear a mask. But when they're interacting with the public in general within 6 feet, and if they're indoors, they should be wearing masks.
All right. We're short on time. Is there anything, any other announcements or things that you'd like to say before we go for next month?
I think all I'd say is I hope everybody will register and vote. It's really important this year. I'm urging people, there are ways to do mail-in voting. You can check with us on that, but please be sure to get out and vote. It's really important that we move in the right directions and everybody participate and vote this year. Plus, get counted in the census if you haven't been. That's really important too.
Is there a deadline for the census?
I don't know that there's an exact deadline, but I know if you haven't answered by now, you're late, and you should reach out to the census by phone or on the web and say you want to get yourself counted. They will contact you, I hope, if you haven't filled out the census form. But if you haven't done it yet, it's time. You're late behind the curve.
And if anyone has any other questions, not only for Mayor Hamilton, but our other cities, please feel free to email us news@indianapublicmedia.org, or you can tweet us @AskTheMayor. Mayor Hamilton, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe. And thanks for everybody following the news.
All right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.